Welcome back to Songwriter Showcase. My name is TJ Moss, and today we have Lee Coulter. You're based here in
Encinitas.
Encinitas, California. Singer-songwriter. Tell us a little bit. You just said you're from Australia.
Yeah, originally from Brisbane, Australia. Yeah, okay. Born and raised, moved to the United States when I was 23, and been in San Diego pretty much since Lake Tahoe for a year and a half first, but San Diego is more my climate, and beaches, so
sure.
Love it down here, yeah.
And so when did you begin your journey as a songwriter?
You know, I was about 10 years old, and my brother, who's 2 years older than me, was already playing guitar, and he was singing Simon & Garfunkel. My father brought home a record that from their live concert in Central Park, and we just both loved it. You know, you fall in love with your parents' music sometimes, and it was a Simon & Garfunkel for my 12-year-old brother. I was 10 years old. The two of us, we started doing two-part harmonies. And so Paul Simon just stuck with me, just like as one of my huge influences, just the diversity. And then soon after that, I was playing bass with him. And then high school, like rock and roll, grunge, R&B and hip hop, all like with everything, you know, Nirvana, Babyface, experimenting with computer music and all that as a high schooler. And then finding my own sound once I moved to the United States, realizing I can go show up to a coffee shop and make some money at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then figuring out I can do this full time. And
was that here in San Diego?
Lake Tahoe.
Oh, okay.
So Lake Tahoe in 2004 when I moved, I just started playing coffee shops and restaurants, and there's only like two musicians in town. Yeah. So it was just like, I was just killing it.
Nice.
You know, I was playing every night, and I thought, I'm going to move to San Diego and make a shit ton of money, because like, you know, if there's only like 500 people in Tahoe, there's like millions of people down here. Right, right. And then I just realized,
big city, San Diego.
Yeah, I realized there's like thousands of musicians.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. But you know, that was 16 years ago. Carved out my corporate, you know, so basically what I do, I'm a songwriter, writes my original music, but I pay the bills with the corporate scene, the gigging scene, the bars, the restaurants, and and producing for other people, producing for myself, doing a little bit of everything, hustling.
It's a life.
Yeah, single dad hustle, musician. Yeah, and it's purposeful because you got the art, and if you can make your art mean the world to you, like it's, you feel like really feel purposeful throughout the day, and just get up in the day, like what can I do today? Keep on going, yeah.
So were you writing songs at the coffee shop? Like, was it original stuff?
Yeah, I already had, you know, an album's worth of originals. This is a songwriting podcast. So at 14, I wrote for my high school girlfriend, you know, like.
Yeah.
And so that was
the first song.
Oh, that was like a little grunge kind of, because I was in Nirvana.
Okay.
It was like, I was angsty, but the lyrics were like, I heard her voice on the bus and blah, blah. It's the cutest little thing. Yeah, because she was a singer. And so it's just like this, like, crush song, you know. And then I just loved the poetry of it. I just knew there was such power, and it was about imbalance, and I was, my role in my family was the peacemaker, and the and I always think about how I used to write like cards to people, and I'd be really intentional with my words and like lifting them up, because I knew that people were hurting. So that was my role as a child, you know. And
paper card, like,
yeah, well, cards, and when I'd write a letter, I'd write it in poems, and and it was my way of making people like my parents or elders like proud and happy, you know. And I knew I had a knack for it, because they're always looking like, wow, this is really personal.
Yeah.
And so I knew how to cut into the thing that they needed here. I wanted to make that feeling, and music just is the easiest way to get that into people. I'd be making feature films if I could have big budgets, and like, I love storytelling. I love making people feel the feelings I think we should feel, you know, whether it's curiosity for new ideas or, you know, new ways of living, or whether it's, you know, just good life gratitude feelings, however you can get that into the people is how I wanted it. And music is the easiest way. You've got beautiful words that have a lulling music underneath it. People just can't absorb it, and I can produce that at home by myself, whereas any other piece of art, yeah, hard to put together.
Sometime maybe in college I was writing the project was to like take a song and just like break it down as a poem, right?
Yeah.
And I chose Eleanor Rigby, big Beatles fan. And it was just like, I saw it on the page, you know, it's a beautiful word,
yeah.
But it's like, think about that song without that music though.
Oh,
it just
totally,
like, you know,
yeah.
it's just words on a page,
right.
But with that.
So powerful.
Ah,
yeah.
It's stunning what music can do,
right.
with words and how it can heighten.
Yeah, it's like a portal. Yeah, it's the vessel for the words to really be impactful.
Yeah.
Without them, it's not the same. It's just like same with music and movies. I mean, We don't give music the credit as a general population. Give it the credit. I was thinking about this. So I sang at a really beautiful chapel the other day. Just thinking on a religious level, spiritual level, like these designers, these architects understand. You walk into that space and you say one word, if it's got an S in it, and it's,
yeah,
you feel like you're closer to heaven. Like, of course, they're designing these spaces so that as soon as you walk into it, on a sound healing level, if you speak, and especially if someone's playing an organ or playing, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And so that's, humans have understood sound healing. Western culture hasn't talked about it, but most other cultures talk about the sound healing level. That's what we're doing. It's all music therapy.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your process. You're like, okay, I have come to a place in my life where I know more of who I am and what I need to share. So,
right.
So what's the process like? Do you just sit down with your guitar and just like, let it go?
There's different ways. And I don't, like, there's some artists that, you know, make a point to write. I don't. I try to let something come through. I've got so much work I need to record that's already written that I'm like, I'm not trying to create more material, but if something's coming through, an idea and an emotion that is troubling me, I mean, that's for me, where I should be spending my time. If something's troubling me or feeling a little off, and I need to express something about it, or if I've got a beautiful feeling, gratitude, I try to write from gratitude to remember this gratitude. So I've got this gratitude right now, and I hate when I don't have it. So I wrote a song about how feeling this. So every time I sing this every day, I'm like, there it is. Yeah.
Writing to remember, that's really powerful.
Oh, yeah. A lot of my songs are reminders.
Yeah.
For sure. To myself and hopefully to someone else. Yeah.
Sure.
It's when something strong like that comes through, and I'm like, okay, I can't keep on just going through the day. I can't keep mixing this other song I'm mixing. I've got to sit with this strong standing that's coming through. And so that's when I'll sit down. And sometimes it'll be like a whole phrase or a whole hook of the lyric. Because I usually start with the purpose of the song,
right?
The theme of the song, and that could be musical. Or you just got if I've just got like a nice little riff or something, I'm like, I can hear the theme.
Yeah.
You know, what's that trying to say? And so I just want that first idea of what's the theme, what's the energy of this song trying to make. Let's use one of the example. Well, I think this would be the song I sing. I don't know.
Yeah, let's go.
It's fun because, like, people that know my music will know this song because it's kind of my business card. It's my anchor song. It's called A Glorious Day on a Planet I Love. It's one of those songs where people are like, that's such a positive song. And my goal is for people to be able to take the song and make a positive day out of whatever they're going through, whether it's a good day already or a not so good day. Letting people in on the story of it, I just realized I'm getting divorced when I wrote this song. Just found out and I drove my son to his school in La Costa, Carlsbad, down the road here. Beautiful area, you know, palm trees everywhere. So I'm feeling the heaviest weight of my life. Like, I'm realizing I'm not going to be under the same roof as an idealistic father. Always wanting to be a father, I'm not going to be under the same roof. That's the hardest feeling I think I've ever had. The story meant so much to me, and the story I was telling myself, how can I continue? You know, that emotion felt like that. And then I'm driving the car, dropped him off, and I'm looking at the blue skies and the palm trees.
All still just...
And so everything's just doing its thing, you know? And so, like, how can I be sitting here feeling this low when there's still, you know, my son's still an awesome little kid going to school and there's trees here. I'm in San Diego. I'm like, I play music for a living. How can I sit here with this much sadness? And what can I say to myself there temporarily? Like, I don't want to not feel the feelings. And I try to feel the feelings when I can. But when it feels that bad, these are the songs that help me not feel that bad. Yeah, that's the complexity behind this positive song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we could break it down with, you know, so I had, all I thought, it's a glorious day on the planet. I just kept on telling myself that because I felt like I wanted to cry. Yeah. I wanted to say, nothing ever works out. You know, you go to that doom story, nothing ever works out. And then the opposite of that is, well, look, it's a glorious day on the planet I love. And so I'm like, that was that. And then so I get home and then said, it's a glorious day on a planet I love. And what comes out. And sometimes it is just feel it in the next word. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And usually I find the hook and I want to work back from the hook.
Yeah.
And just like, how do I get to, how do I say what I need to say and then get back to it? And so the first verse is just my thoughts. And yeah, so you're here. Okay. Thank you. It's a glorious day on the planet I love. Let me tell you what I'm thinking of. 'Cause I've been wondering why it was. But it's just life doing what it does. And we keep trying to mess it up. They keep trying to bring us down. So I'm just gonna smile at everything around. 'Cause I've got earth beneath my feet and the sky above. And it's a glorious day on the planet I love. And don't tell me about someday, somehow. 'Cause all we need is right here, right now. I've got some rhythm and I got some rhyme, yeah. I got my music and I got my mind. We were sinking in circles, imprisoned in the past. No, I'm just gonna be and I'm free at last. 'Cause I've got earth beneath my feet and the sky above. And it's a glorious day on the planet I love. Because there's children playing somewhere. How's life on Jupiter? I don't care, oh no. 'Cause we've got lovers just laying there. Well, I'm no hero, I'm not brave. I'm just tired of being afraid. 'Cause I've been wondering why it was. But it's just life doing what it does. And I've got earth beneath my feet and the sky above. We've got to rise above that old push and shove. 'Cause I've got earth beneath my feet and the sky above, oh yeah. And it's a glorious day on the planet I love. Whoa, oh, such a glorious day. It's a glorious day on the planet I love. It's a glorious day on the planet I love. Such a glorious day on the planet we love.
So good, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
So good. I hear that God chord, the F sharp. What is that? Oh, I mean, what in E? In E, what is that? That's like a dominant two or
that's
something.
My theory does it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The carry. Yeah. Right. The carry.
That's what hit. Beautiful song. Beautiful, like, beautiful story.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it necessarily. Yeah. It's like,
No, and like, I reckon few people would get
exactly.
That came from such a place.
Totally. But that's, to me, that's why it sounds so happy.
Yeah.
I couldn't write authentically happy. Because if you try to write happy just when you're happy, it sounds
right.
So stupid.
Yeah, but there's that bittersweetness to it.
Totally.
You know?
It's the complexity that makes it real.
Yeah.
You can't do it without the complexity.
It's a good business card you got.
Thank you. Yeah, because I always think, because you don't want to play something that's the wrong mood.
Mm-hmm.
But you can play that if someone's sad.
Yeah.
Because it's a really sad song. If you're in a sad mood, like you think it plays a cum song
for that.
It's really quite a wallowing song. Like,
yeah.
The How's Life on Jupiter, like, it's like it's such a surrender song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're sad, it works. If you're happy, it works. So that's how I knew. Oh, yeah. You know, when you got that complex kind of reality, you're onto something.
Absolutely.
What people need is fearlessness. They're not listening for the best sound. The best sound to them is fearlessness.
Right.
And the best artists are fearless.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they cut through, because when you hear in their energy field, whatever genre they're singing, that they are true to themselves. You're like, oh, that's the thing that I'm looking for.
That resonates.
Yeah, I feel that truth.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for mine, because there's all these things saying, I got to live this way, I got to be this, I got to be that. when I hear that truth cutting through, American jazz, American blues, that truth coming through the darkness, yeah, there's something I relate. Everyone relates to it. Even if that's not my experience, but we all understand oppression. We all understand darkness because that's how evolution works. Like life is a little oppressive, yeah. You can't do that. But I want to, but you can't. Yeah. So right, that everyone understands that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you hear music from the oppressed and the imbalance becoming balanced, you're like, whoa, that's what I need in my life. Yeah. So
that's like transcendence.
It is.
And art can really transcend all that, the suffering.
I think it's the singular goal. All art aims to bring you out of, yeah, and move it to a different place, you know. No matter what it is.
Well, speaking personally, my experience of seeing you with the belly up, that's what I saw. I saw fearlessness, and I saw just a comfort in your body.
Mm-hmm. That's the removal of the self-doubt.
And it came through me in a way where I was just like, I felt it, and I was like, I was inspired by it, and I was like, in that way that Martin Sexton does.
Right.
Like, in that way where I'm like, he's so embodied, he's so in himself that it doesn't matter. All this other stuff is just...
Well, that's how we can learn from artists like that. Yeah. And I specifically learned from him and a few others, but like Martin being one of them, one of the major ones. What we are drawn to is the fearlessness.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what type of artist they are, but if their fearlessness it shows in their own way, it's mesmerizing. You could have the loudest band in the world, but if they're just playing music the way that, you know, in a bar, it might not hit you like one guy.
Yeah.
He's fearless. Before he plays a note, you can feel the energy, the confidence.
Yeah.
And there's artistry in that. You know, there's self-awareness in that. And when you see a human who's self-aware, you're like, oh, how do you get to that? It's like we all kind of long to get to that space where we just, you know, to me, the feeling is the ability to grapple with uncertainty. And the fearless artist doesn't care about uncertainty. The fearless artist knows that now, right now, I have a chance to move people, to be with people, to be here with my tribe. And the best artists are there, and they don't care that someday they might not be on that stage. They don't care that someday they might be dead. Humans fear that void, that mm-hmm. feeling. And so art is like, let's not worry about that. Let's connect right now.
Yeah.
And when we're moved by artists, it takes us away from that part of our brain and goes, yes, right now is important, which, you know, Martin Sexton does. And that's what I try to do in my lyrics, as well as, you know, just my presence. And I was telling someone, a friend, artist friend the other day, who's new in her career, that, you know, the biggest thing we can do is just own our fearlessness, because our songwriting skills and all our other skills will come mm-hmm. over time. But the fearlessness will bring the attention, and it's like a self-fulfilling fearlessness. Like, as soon as you feel it the first time and you walk into a room with it and people are saying that they felt it, you become more fearless.
Yeah.
And so I can do it now, or I can just walk anywhere. Because the first few times, it's a practice. You got to go, I've got to act fearless.
Right.
I've got to think that I'm fearless. And the first few times when you go, because I'm on some artists, when they're 18, they're already like this. 16, Billie Eilish at 13 is sounding like that. I mean, there's a fearlessness mm-hmm. that I think some people just through their life experience have that confidence. But I was not that. I was codependent, traumatized. Hey, does everybody like me? I'm scared as hell up here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to impress everybody, overdoing everything out of codependence. They don't kick me off the stage. But when the first few times, I've been 18 years. So for 18 years, I'm a full-time artist. And yeah, and 4 years ago, that's 14 years into it, I'm thinking, I want to try, you know, going through my therapy, I want to try to do this fearlessness thing, because I'm seeing the artists that I like embody that fearlessness. And so you get up on the mic, you make a conscious decision. I've got to get up here. And like, I understand that when you show up to a show and you think everyone's going to judge you because you're setting up your gear and everyone's in the crowd, what's this guy going to play? And you get that feeling. Everyone in the crowd think of that when they walk in the room. They're thinking like, what are they thinking of me? What I'm wearing? So like, it's the artist's job, who is the person that people came here to see, to go, all of that nonsense in our heads is absolute nonsense. Mm. And if I'm thinking that, how do I expect any of the people that came to see me to not embrace that feeling? Like, they've come here to embrace my feeling. And so if I'm up there thinking, oh, I'm self-doubt and I don't know if I'm good enough to entertain these people, they're going to be like, I don't know why I'm here. You know?
Right.
But if I'm like, hey, life is grand, you know, like the energy that I try to embody is that life is grand because we're here right now. And we have the privilege of being in a space where we can actively listen to music. And that's not always been the case for our species. You know, mm-hmm. It's been a lot more troubling than that. So let's live it up, you know. And that's, no matter how dark the songs or the themes can get, it's about understanding that privilege. And so the first time, you know, I acted confident and maybe bought it for like half a song. And I do that to this day, where I'll catch myself halfway through a song and I'm like not totally engaged in the lyric. And when I'm like trying to be engaged in the song fully, every song I sing, because why else are people listening to anything I'm saying? You know, I'm trying to be transcendent. But if I'm phoning it in or not feeling the song and not being my best self, like, that's a wasted opportunity. Yeah. And so it takes a while. So try to say to artists is that you've got to, you know, essentially fake it till you make it. You've got to tell yourself the stories that work for you to make you believe your story, that you're the worthy one. And the easiest way for me to put that is that, like I said, we're all artists in a way, and we all need to share. And there's a lot of terrible stuff. So just sharing vulnerability induces oxytocin in the people. That should take care of the self-doubt, because everyone's needed in that capacity.
And eventually you believe it, and then it becomes that feedback loop.
It does. You see it when, you know, when we try not to believe it, you get that one person who comes up and thanks you at the end of the, oh, thank you, that was really needed that today.
I messed up this note.
Yeah. And then we say, oh yeah. And we're thinking in their head, they probably like this band that I don't like, you know. Right. The fact is, we're here to move humans, and that, like, who are we to judge people's tastes, and, you know, that they're incorrect about us. And to me, it's all kind of like a continuation of the trauma-based stories. And when I say trauma, people are triggered by this word, and it's a popular word to use, but a lot of my kind of self-work has been on personal trauma that's related to global trauma, you know, historic family tree trauma, which we all have. And part of my artistry is like trying to help people awaken into the fact that we don't see how deep the grooves of trauma through all our cultures have gotten to, how deep these traumas are, and how we operate on a day-to-day basis in our families and in our societies, in our governments, that come from like family tree trauma war. Like, I always like to look at our species and artistry as ways of humanity over time, like over hundred year period. So like, where have the ways come? Why have we got current kind of art we've got? What kind of events happened throughout the world that needed this art at this time? And when you look at humanity from that kind of zoomed out perspective, you see so much trauma and so much imbalance. And a lot of the art that we have is trying to find meaning and balance in a lot of trauma. All art, and definitely all my art, is trying to create that balance.
Did you hear the song Richmond, North of Richmond?
Ooh.
It recently came out, and we discussed it on this podcast. This guy, Oliver Anthony, just kind of like, it's this guy from the mountains of North Carolina. You might call him a hillbilly.
Yeah.
You know, he's just this guy, this dude. And sang this song on a resonator guitar, his voice and a guitar, not unlike the, you know, whatever he said, really struck a chord with people. He went viral immediately, released the song. And then we were saying, he went number one on Billboard, first time in history. He debuted at number one.
Wow.
And just a guy on a mic release on, you know, on Spotify.
When you hit something, when you grab something from the ethers, and that's been my journey, is like the puzzle of like, what is it that the humans need? That's one way to approach art. And I don't claim that's the way that everyone should approach art. But for me, it is like analyzing the history and the psychology and trying to poetically put something in the ethers that, you know, talks to whatever's out there. And in the general psyche, the trauma and the hurt and the confusion, the defensiveness, how do we break through and help people find their vulnerability and go, let's look at ourselves. But when someone finds it, and it's a beautiful thing. And that's the beautiful journey as an artist, is like the forever search, the quest to like put those things just right. And that's my privilege to think about these things.
I think that's what music actually is, that which breaks down that space between, right?
Yeah,
if we can all agree that this music is moving us, we're standing in a room together.
Right.
Like, it's unified.
Totally. Well, that's what
breaks down.
I think about what art does is like almost everybody's responsibility, at least to express themselves. And artists are the ultimate version of that, because how do we know what our society is? How do I know what anyone is thinking? You know, it's the artists, it's the people expressing themselves.
The voice. Yeah.
And so I don't know, we can't calibrate as a species if people aren't saying, this is how I feel about that. And so an artist says, this is how I feel about that. And the rest of us go, oh, I feel that too. How communal, how great. Now we know how my community thinks, because the artist says this, and we go, oh yeah, and then we kind of give that a thumbs up, and the more thumbs up we get, we can decide my society kind of generally has this feeling, and that our responsibility as artists to help us calibrate that. So that's why we feel that when we're in a room with a popular band or whatever, it's like, oh, this is universally human. And I think about why, you know, the rhythms, or you know, the humanity. My thing is always going back to we're always grappling with uncertainty. So music is a way to go, what's going to happen next? Like, you know that. You know what's going to finish on the one. We're expecting, like, my expectations here in life, my expectations here, and that my life took me here. In music, my expectations here, and like, you deliver. And so there's a comfort to just listen to your favorite songs, to the music. I know what's, even songs you don't know, there's formulas in it that you know where it's going to go, or a lyric, that a rhyme that you, and so it's just certainty. Boom, boom, here's it, and it's a heartbeat, here's the beat.
Familiarity.
Yeah, all that, all the stuff that we don't have, and that we fear in real life. Here's music that's going, oh, well, there's calmness, or, you know, fun, or joy, or the feelings I want, with my expectations being met, like, wow, yeah. So, and all art has a version of that. You know, music is over time, so that helps with the communal certainty. But
in the occasional chord where you find where you accidentally play it, you're like,
yeah, right. Well, yeah.
God's talking to me now.
Well, yeah, and that's life. You know, you go, you know, the bridge is like, I go off on this journey, off this direction, and they come back. It's always back to center. Yeah. It's all like human. Like my goal is for people to look at psychology, history, and art as, you know, fundamentally human. And all these things we need to practice and think about for a healthy kind of mindset. Like, why am I the way that I am? Like, that's a fundamental thing people should think. Why am I the way that I am? Why, when this thing happens and I react this way, why is that? And if we look at the world and our families or our history, and like we have a lot more understanding, and with understanding comes less suffering. And so if we're suffering in our purpose, suffering in like, am I parenting right? Am I being a good partner? Whatever the suffering is, whatever the story comes from, there's probably stories there. If you haven't looked at it, there's probably stories that you don't need to be carrying. And so my music has become a lot of, hey, it's time to reframe. What stories are you carrying? And how are you grappling with uncertainty? What do you do to grapple with the uncertainty? Because a lot of the suffering that we cause on others is because of our own trouble, grappling with their own uncertainty. On a personal level and on a cultural wide, if a whole nation feels uncertain, what are they going to do?
Yeah. You can hear, because you have records in time,
right.
You went into a room and you recorded your voice and yourself singing this song on that day. Because of that, you have a record of your progression. And we have a record of society's progression. Right? And so I think as songwriters, we're scribes of this social pulse. As long as there's digital ink, you know, as long as there's a grid, electricity and stuff, this will all continue in perpetuity. We have a responsibility. I just really love how you framed it, that it begins here, you know?
Okay.
The process begins here. And even as a seasoned songwriter, you could have just gone through the motions and continued down your path, you know? You decided to go further inward, and it's liberated you.
It has liberated me. And I'd say the reason, thank you, but the reason would be I was suffering. All the artist is trying to do is find some sort of closure, some sort of balance. I'm trying to create balance, and I'm writing these songs that cerebrally and lyrically, yes, and even the chord progressions, like on paper, that they were working, even when I hadn't had my healing. Like, I understood the words that I needed to say, but until I had my healing, I couldn't, you know, feel them. And in the mindset of, I just want to write the next Bob Dylan song, or I just want to be the next Paul Simon, in that mindset, I wasn't reaching, I can't be the next Bob Dylan, I can't be the next Paul Simon. Even the songs I was singing, like, as proud as I was of them, it's almost like they weren't deep enough. I hadn't done enough deep, dark soul searching to bypass just the happy-go-lucky. Even though I thought some of this stuff, people say it's positive music, I'm like, I know it's coming from a place that desires positivity, so it sounds positive, but it's coming from a hurt place. I know it's got this complex thing to it, and people come to me and it's such a happy song, and I'm fine with that. But until it, you know, there was trouble in the world, and people were thinking, oh, but Lee's saying the world's fine, so, you know, it can't be. And I was like, man, I'm definitely not being nuanced enough then, I guess. Yeah, I think music is about, there's times where we need that discomfort, every little thing's going to be all right. Like, I've grappled with toxic positivity and thinking about my own music. And, like, you know, we talk about spiritual music. Where can my music cross over into toxic positivity? And my feeling on that now is that our nervous systems need affirmations, and it doesn't make it wrong. Bob Marley saying, don't worry about a thing. Every little thing's going to be all right. That could be taken on a bad day, in the wrong moment, that could be taken as a really bad sentiment and not what you need to hear. But does that mean that people like Bob shouldn't sing stuff like that? And my answer is no. There's times we can't get through a day if our nervous systems don't believe that things are going to be all right. And there's a lot of days where it feels like they're not going to be all right. And if I'm not telling myself, or the artist isn't telling me, that things are going to be all right, like, I might not be able to ensure that things could go better than they would have if I'm just dissociated or flailing in life because my nervous system and my worries are too high. So we need music and art that says, hey, I'm down. So I'm good with that these days. But I was trying to find, while I'm still doing that kind of music, because that's important, a deeper gear that was speaking to issues that weren't just bypassing, you know, reality.
Well, it sounds like more authentic. It's more honest because you've done that work, right?
Right.
And it's easy to be like, oh, just do the work. You got to do the work. Everybody's trying to do the work, but you actually did some work.
Yeah. And well, it's the vulnerability. And I would say this, if artists are listening to this, I learned that a lot of artists have codependency. And part of what drives your artistry is your codependence with the audience. And I don't think artists understand that you developed a codependency somehow, probably familial somewhere along the line, and you're trying to find your balance that you don't feel through what you're saying to your audience and to the feedback you get from your audience. You might have codependency in you. And if you haven't looked at the codependency, now I'm using the codependency as, you know, it's part of my job. But I have a grasp on what's happening, and I don't let the emotions of if I don't have a great reaction from the crowd, I don't let that be my self-worth. Is now, am I even a decent artist? Like, I can't question myself because I'm producing art and getting oxytocin, so that's the best of my ability. Great job, Lee. So I'm not reacting emotionally as a codependent person, but I realize that the relationship is somewhat codependent. They came out for a good night out and a fun experience. They were relying on me to provide that. I'm relying on them for my job to feel purpose. Like, I feel purpose when I have a good reaction. But if it doesn't happen, it's that work of no expectation. So then don't let the self-doubt creep up because it wasn't a great reaction. And if you do that, you usually get a great reaction, but not always.
Welcome back to Songwriter Therapy Sessions. I am your host, TJ Moss.
It's all we do. Artists don't understand that. Like, I think it's funny that in Western culture, we have these musicians and these music therapists. And yeah. Like, nah, you're all doing that wrong. I saw Martin Sexton on stage. That was music. He's a music therapist. It's all music therapy. Yeah. Heavy metal is music therapy. Like, it's all music therapy. There's no such thing as music and music therapists. I've been thinking about, you know, when we talk about history and our upbringing and the way our views are shaped, we're looking at art wrong. You know, I'm half Indonesian, well, quarter Indonesian, quarter Thai. And my very Western upbringing kind of made me cut that side of me off. And the more, like, part of my awakening was, like, getting in touch with it. I'm a dancer, and I'm like, I play music in a way that isn't like all my Americana friends. And I didn't know what, I mean, I kind of knew what that was about. I love hip hop, and I'm like, what's this about? Where's this coming from? I got to dance. And so I've been delving into that side of myself. And part of that is, you know, going through yoga, which, you know, I'm not Indian, but with my Eastern side, with the Asian side, and the kind of superstitions I grew up with, was my mom's belief system from Indonesia and Thailand, and from a Buddhist background. It's like all the Western things that would be like a joke, acupuncture, yoga, ha ha ha, like all these hippies trying to woo-woo, yeah? And so, and music and dancing and all these, like, and professional kind of, you know, performers, and what an exotic thing to do. And I'm like, and we're wondering why in Western society there's depression and anxiety, right, and defensiveness. I'm like, because the acupuncture and yoga and dance and singing aren't just luxuries. These are things that over thousands of years humans have gone, well, these are things we need to do on a somewhat daily basis just to get through life without anxiety in our nervous system. You know, all, you just sing to each other.
Work it out.
Get together, you know.
Yeah.
And it was seen as this, you know, luxury or this exotic thing to do, or, you know, that person's got talent, so they're a musician. Like, I'm like, no, that's the wrong way of thinking about it. everyone gets together, we share. Yeah. So that's my spiel.
Yeah. My father-in-law had this on his bucket list. I want to go to Nova Scotia. And like everybody in Nova Scotia was like, why are you going to Nova Scotia?
Sure. It was a beautiful place. I'm sure it's a nice place. I've never been here.
Beautiful place. But we went the very last night of our vacation, we went to like a festival in this place in Aganish. Okay. Aganish. Music festival. Okay. And this woman, basically like a Celtic fiddle player. And she comes on stage and her family, her husband is also a Celtic fiddle player, and they have this family band, right? There's like 7 kids, okay? And they are all masters beyond, like, you can't even imagine. It's like, they all play virtuosic, basically. Like, they're masters.
How old are the kids?
They range from, like, 19 to, like,
2.
And they all come on stage at some point. And they all play fiddle, like, and they're all masters. Like, you're like,
2-year-old.
Okay, what? Even, like, the 2-year-old, not there yet.
Yeah.
And then they all had one instrument, which was one played piano, one played like accordion. They all did the Irish step dancing. So they all clogged as well. And it was just like, at some point I was just like, I'm thinking my life, right?
Sure.
Like these kids are masters at like multiple like disciplines, right?
Right.
And it was just overwhelming, and it was amazing, it was inspiring. But like, it also just made me think that like, this is who they are.
Sure.
This is, they're clogging it out. Like this is in their body, right? This is in their body.
Yeah,
and like, it's cultural. It was just a cultural thing where I was just like, this is in these people, right? This isn't like, sure, their family band, like that's their job, right? That's
like this,
their,
this feels
know,
nice.
But this feels, felt like something so deep and so pure, and like, this is just who they are. And it was like, it kind of like washed me clean, and I felt like so recharged by it.
I think as we all long for that. And I know, because being an Australian that lives in the United States, being like even in Australia where I was born and raised, I knew I wasn't like just a regular Australian. There was things that made me stand out there, being half Indonesian, Indonesian and Thai, as well as Australian. And so that belonging, that cultural identity, that was never mine. There's parts of Australia that I definitely resonate with for sure, just growing up there, but there's parts of it that don't. And the same with America. There's so many things I love about America, but you know, everyone's looking for that place where they feel like they're home. And for someone, you know, I always think, I used to be like self-conscious about an Australian playing American music in America. Like, who is this guy? But now I realize, because of my multiculturalism and the world we live in, I kind of represent this modern species of like, I'm from all over the place. And so I can share with people that aren't from all over the place. Many of us are, but if you don't have as a diverse kind of heritage, I can share to the mainstream, to a Western world where I speak that language, I grew up with that mentality, a bit of that diversity and the perspective in a way that the people that need to hear it can say it. So now I feel purpose. I don't feel like a fraud. I don't feel like, the Americana artist from Australia. What's
going on?
I'm like, no, I'm from Australia and Indonesia, and I've got something to share about the world. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Lee Coulter, it is it's so good to have you. We just kind of dove in.
Yeah, we didn't
let's introduce. Hey, Lee Coulter, what a pleasure, man.
Thanks
for coming on Songwriter Showcase. Such a pleasure to have you. Can you tell people where to find you and what's going on with you?
The best thing is the Instagram. It's like, if I'm playing a show that's like a fun one to come to, at Lee Coulter, COULTER. Just follow my Instagram. Otherwise, LeeCoulter.com. If you're not on social media, just LeeCoulter.com.
LeeCoulter.com. And you got anything on coming out soon? Or
you know, I'm forever working on an EP. So I'm trying to release something for Halloween. I've got a holiday song that's complicated, and I'm excited about the complexity of this holiday song. Like, because I'm not people who know me, they're not thinking I'm going to write a holiday song.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is deep. This is a challenge.
That's a challenge. Great.
So, but it's beautiful. Like it's. I'm
keep stretching.
Yeah. So things are coming out, and I'm working on an EP, like a 6-song EP, that hopefully by the new year.
Wonderful. Self-produced.
Self-produced, and that's it's all good. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing more from you.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having us. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, dude, along for the journey.
Yeah. Been a pleasure.
All right.
Yeah.